Welcome to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Activate is a comics creator community established by Dean Haspiel, who used their site to promote their creator-owned stories. Last week, IDW released the Activate Primer, which has 16 stories that are companion pieces to the free stories that you'll find at ActivateComicsWithAnX.com. Today on Word Balloon, we talk to several Activate creators about their works and what brought them together. Mike Cavallaro talks about his Activate strip Leviathan and his 2008 Eisner-nominated graphic novel Parade with Fireworks. Mike is also the co-creator of The Life and Times of Savior 28, the IDW miniseries he made with J.M. DeMatteis. We talk with Simon Fraser of 2000 AD fame, the co-creator of Nicolai Dante, who talks about his strip Lily McKenzie and The Minds of Charybdis. Michelle Fife joins us to talk about his brother-sister story Zagus. Tim Hamilton talks about The Adventures of the Floating Elephant. Filmmakers Seth Kushner and Carlos Molina join us to talk about their 32-minute documentary, The Activate Experience. And finally, a conversation with Activate founder Dean Haspiel. He's back to talk about his strip Billy Dogma and his creative input in the new HBO comedy series, Bored to Death. While I talk to the guys about their various comic strips, you owe it to yourself to go to ActivateComics, comicswithanx.com, and check out their free comics that are there. Everything we talk about is up there for free, and also we talk about the Activate Primer from IDW. So do yourself a favor, make sure you check out the visuals while you listen to this audio from Word Balloon. I'm here at the Activate booth, and I'm talking to Mike Cavallaro, who's done a wonderful job on The Life and Times of Savior 28, a great book that he has done with, and I'm going to say it wrong, so I'm going to say it wrong first, and then Mike will correct me. J.M. DeMatteis?
That's what he says.
Okay, fine. Then that's what I'm going for.
The first time I met him, I was like, the first time I spoke with him on the phone, I said, first question, how do you pronounce your last name? And he said, DeMatteis. And I was like, you know that's wrong, right? and he goes, yes, it should be DeMatteis. I was like, I have to say DeMatteis because I can't, I'm hardwired that way. He's like, that's fine. So I actually still say DeMatteis, even though he doesn't even introduce himself that way. So whatever.
all of our immigrant relatives got screwed at Ellis Island, so that's okay. Mike, it's I really enjoyed Savior 28. I think it was a really cool story that at the same time had a very individual cartoony style, but also evoked a lot of the eras that you were covering in the story, going back to the Golden Age through modern day.
I hope so. And thank you. And you know, I have to say, I've been a fan of JM's my entire comic reading life, and I didn't have anything to do with the actual writing of it. I can say I really loved the story too. You know, I'm not complimenting myself. It was just great. I remember receiving the first manuscript, and I was just like blown away and so excited to be working on it. And he was great to work with. So yeah, thanks. I mean, I had been starting to dabble with, you know, what I really loved about Kirby's work, especially on Thor after issue 137. I really got excited about that stuff. And I was doing a strip called Leviathan, which was sort of my love letter to that period of Marvel Comics, and I was serializing that on Activate. And I had sent that to JM just to say, like, here's what I've been up to. I sent him the first maybe 7 or 8 pages. And that was it. He wrote back immediately and was like, this is exactly the way I want this project I've been writing to look. Can I send your samples with my script to IDW? And we had an agreement by 6 o'clock that afternoon, which was crazy. So, yeah, that's how it happened. It was actually Activate kind of sparked that. It gave me a platform to do this experiment that I wanted to do. And that led to Savior 28, which is how Activate's supposed to work, you know.
Excellent. How did you come to Activate, and how do you know all these guys?
What happened was I had met Byron Price, the late Byron Price, who some of your listeners may know. He had been publishing and packaging comics for maybe 30 years. He was Joe Kubert's assistant when Joe Kubert was a editor at DC. And I had met Byron at the MoCA convention in New York, and I did a graphic novel adaptation of The Wizard of Oz for him for Penguin Books. And for the same line of graphic novels, Tim Hamilton did Treasure Island. And that's how I met Tim. I was seeing his work when I went to drop off my work, and I was blown away by his work. And so we tracked each other down, and I got to know Tim, who was a founding member of Activate. And Tim was getting, you know, busier and busier, and he needed to take a 2-month hiatus from Activate. And he just said, like, I need you to fill in my slot on Activate. Can you come up with maybe like a 16 pager? Because I need 2 months off. One or two pages a week. And I started what would become Parade with Fireworks. But I serialized maybe my first few episodes, and I got the sense this is going to be more than 16 pages. But fortunately, Dean Haspiel said, you're a permanent member now. You're not filling in anymore. And so it turned into a 52-page story, which was then picked up by Image Comics, which was then nominated for an Eisner Award, and it's now out as a trade paperback. And that's how I met the Activate guys and, you know, got invited into Activate.
Cool. In the primer, we've got Veils.
Yes.
And a very cool Atlantis story. And again, I can't help but think of the Marvel Atlantis, especially the way you depict them, and in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. The homage thing is always tricky because you don't want to steal. But here's the thing, you know, when I started reading comics, I got into comics in the 80s reading independent stuff. And my inspirations to become a comic book artist, you know, among things like JM's Moonshadow, which I also consider an independent thing, was stuff like Zah, and especially Love and Rockets was one of my major inspirations. And I had that sort of indie underground arrogance about mainstream comics, and so I ignored Marvel Comics. And only in the past few years have I gone back and been like, you know, you sort of realize how stupid that is and how much great artwork there is in the history of American comics. And so you start going backwards, and fortunately there's so much incredible stuff in print and that you have access to suddenly. So I'm reading a lot of Marvel stuff for the first time over maybe the past 5 years. So I'm having that, like, reaction that I should have had when I was a kid, I'm having now. And it's irrepressible. Like, when you read, you know, that period of Thor for the first time, it's like, you know, it's like getting hit by lightning, no pun intended. And you have to have, like, an artistic reaction to it because it's so inspirational. And so Leviathan just grew out of that. It just... Also, it was a reaction to Parade, because Parade is a true story about my family. And there is a kind of a responsibility that is sort of like, you know, it's kind of like heavy, because you don't want to disappoint your family members. You don't want to offend anybody. And it's sort of like a tricky thing to handle, you know? So after I had finished that, I just wanted to flex some other muscles and have fun. Like, I didn't want to delve into immediately another story that was going to have that sort of responsibility to it. I just sort of wanted to have fun. So the two things together made me do Leviathan, you know? And like I said, it's, you want to... it created an homage. You don't want to steal. So I'm trying to tap those things that are universal. And, you know, Atlantis predates Marvel Comics. And I'm just trying to have fun with it. And the thing is, the reaction I get about Leviathan is that, wow, what a fun story. But my promise to anyone who's following along is that it's actually a very multi-layered story, and you're scratching the tip of the iceberg now. I'm simply putting the pieces on the playing board at the moment, and I promise that it's not just mindless fun. There is a lot going on that you're only seeing the hint of right now.
Very cool. And I think your style, again, is a good introductory style to kind of come in, and we saw that in Savior 28, and I would say the same for Leviathan. The trade is 52 pages. How much of the story is online?
Of Parade?
Or, excuse me, Veils is part of Leviathan, correct?
Veils is part of Leviathan, and for that story... No, it's definitely online. There's maybe 30-something pages online right now. And Leviathan has been on hiatus. I got very busy working on an upcoming first-second graphic novel, first-second books. And and Savior 28 kind of all at the same time. And I had to put Leviathan on hiatus, but I have been penciling and writing like crazy. So Leviathan is getting set to relaunch on November 4th. It's Wednesday, 3rd or 4th. It's the first Wednesday in November. And I'm going to...
Just a couple weeks, and I'm going to
relaunch with the third chapter.
Excellent.
And, you know, the veils, you know, everything in the primer is meant to tease our Activate comics. So they're exclusive to print. You won't find the story in the primer. You won't find those pages online.
Okay.
You'll find Leviathan.
Okay.
And this story kind of adds further dimension to our ongoing stories online, but it's exclusive to print, and so is everything else in the primer.
Okay. I think that's great, and it's something that Dean mentioned to me earlier this weekend in terms of, and I think everyone kind of sees the digital comics being the introduction to the eventual trade, and I think it's probably, if anything is an endangered species, you know, years down the line, it might be the floppy magazine.
I agree. I agree. I mean, that doesn't make me happy necessarily. I think there's like a perfect storm forming to make that a reality where, you know, I think that story dictates format. And some things aren't meant to be in a floppy. And some things thrive as a floppy. And but I do think that whatever you choose to do, whether it's a graphic novel of greater length, or a traditional 22 pager, you got to write for your format. And I understand that we're going to do story arcs and then they're going to be gathered together as trade paperbacks, but I feel like I think it's kind of irresponsible to ask people to pay $4 for something that's not episodic. That's not a satisfying chunk of story.
I think
it's actually killing the floppy because it encourages people not to buy it. You know, I think the floppy could do a lot better if you got a real story. And I know I'm hyping, but when I got that manuscript for the first issue of Savior 28, I read it and I felt like I had really read something. And my response to Mark, or JM, was... you know, I wrote him and I said, don't take this the wrong way, but if there's never another issue of this comic, it's complete. And that's what I felt about the first issue. I felt like I'd read a Silver Age comic.
I understand.
In terms of the satisfying amount of story in there. And I feel that if more people were doing that type of content or that amount of content, that the floppy would actually be doing a little better than it is.
No, yeah. I agree. I think a lot of mainstream people that I've talked to, some of the publishers have tried to say that that's what they give everybody each month and that the bigger story is the trade. But you're right. I think a lot of things do feel, they've kind of equated it to watching an hour-long drama and saying that each act, you know, represents kind of an issue of a comic. And I said, well, it really doesn't. It really doesn't. And it's not a full story in itself. And I agree with you in terms of Savior 28. It definitely had that satisfying read. And I would say that a lot about a lot of the stories in the Activate Primer as well.
It's a real challenge. I can't believe how hard it was to write a 12-pager. Oh, my God. It was just so much paring down. It's harder to write. I mean, I know that's a cliche, but it is harder to write a short story than it is to if you have an unlimited amount of space, you know. But that was an interesting challenge. It was a new challenge for me, you know.
And think of all the Silver and Bronze Age guys that got their start writing 5- and 8-page and 6-page stories.
Absolutely. And, yeah, because then you can really appreciate those exact stories you're referring to. When you read a 6-pager and feel like you actually got something, that's a masterpiece, you know? Even if the story isn't really reaching for anything grand, even a simple story, that's hard to do in 6 pages. And they were really good at it.
Do you, also for the digital format, because in the Activate, a lot of your panels are big. And I know in the case, too, when I've spoken to Dean before and a lot of what he does with Billy Dogma, a lot of the panels really are almost meant to be seen on a phone or certainly on a computer screen, but even, like I said, on a portable device. So, does that play a role when you create panels for Leviathan?
Absolutely. I did parade. I always work for, I imagine, print. I don't think web. So Parade was done to print specifications. The pages were high res, and they were shaped like a traditional comic book page. And even I was annoyed reading Parade, having to scroll a little on each page because it doesn't fit vertically on a monitor. So when I did Leviathan, I turned it so that it was a landscape format so that you would not have to scroll to get the page. And also at the time, I was really enjoying the Terry and the Pirates reprint, right? Amazing. And I was sitting there reading one of those volumes, and I got to some Sunday page, and I'm looking at it, and it just hit me, the obvious, that this is a computer monitor, and wow, we've gone totally full circle, where this this format from the dawn of comics is suddenly relevant again. It's suddenly cutting edge again.
Isn't that interesting?
Absolutely. And then we go back to what we were just talking about, like, Kniff could give you an entire really satisfying story in like one page of a couple panels, and you really got something. And it's really each one of those was a masterpiece. So I was learning a lot from that, and that's around the time I was developing Leviathan and just writing. And that's reading that Sunday page was like, this is the format I'm going to use. Now, of course, I'm not doing that exact format because mine are still pages and you're not getting anything self-contained in one page, but it was just the shape and the spirit of handling it in that way. I find it actually really difficult to work in that shape. I'm used to the traditional comic book shape, and I really like that shape, and turning the thing landscape has an incredible effect on your on your storytelling. And we all worked on the primer in that shape. And at our studio, there's a lot of people who contributed to the primer. And we were all, like, looking at each other like, this is really hard in this shape. It really screws up what you're used to doing. It makes you not, you're not able to rely on your old tricks. And you have to sort of rethink what you do.
It's great stuff, man. I like I said, I enjoyed Veils and love Savior 28. So now I'm going to have to go and pursue Leviathan and check out Parade. And continued success. It's like I say, you have a great open style that I think is very inviting for mainstream readers that haven't been exposed to some of the stuff that Activate might be known for by reputation. But I think once they actually start reading the stuff, I think they'll find that it is a very easy type of storytelling that they can get just as involved with as if they're sitting with a DC or Marvel book. So
I hope so. You know, I mean, this is maybe going to sound a little corny, but I spent a lot of time in bands. I spent maybe 10 years touring and playing with bands and stuff like that. And so music is like really a huge part of my life. And, you know, one of my favorite musicians is Johnny Cash. And Johnny Cash always said that he tries to, when he sings a song, he tries to sing it in a way that anybody could sing. And he felt that was part of his appeal, was that people felt very comfortable hearing it, and anyone could sing along with that song. Whereas I admire a lot of the intricate work people do on the comic book pages, and I'm a fan of a lot of that work, when it comes to my own stuff, I want to approach it in the same way, where it's very open, and it's not a challenge at all for someone who may have never read a comic before to read along with that and follow the story. So I don't do a lot of the crazy layouts and stuff like that, because I want someone who's never read a comic before to follow it unconsciously. At the last con that I did, I had two people come up to me. And one guy said that his dad was from Italy. He was first generation, like I am. And his dad had never read a comic book before. And this guy had bought Parade and read it and gave Parade with Fireworks to his dad. It was the first comic book his dad had ever read. And he loved it. And while I was talking to that guy, another guy came up and told me the same story, only it was his mom. So I got two of those within 5 minutes. And that's exactly what I was going for, is those people who never read a comic before forgot that it was a comic, which is what you want. You don't want them to be conscious of that. You just want to tell the story. And that, to me, was like a huge thing. And that is consciously inspired by that Johnny Cash quote, which I thought was really got into my head and made me want to do what he did with music and do it on a comic book page where you just forgot what it was, and you just went along for the ride.
Well, and I think, again, yeah, as you said, too, mentioning Milton Kniff, going back to that old format and stuff might be the way to get new readers and stuff, and subconsciously in the case of these parents and stuff, kind of keying into storytelling that they probably remember as kids.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. That's what you want to tap. That's what you want to tap.
That's great, Mike. Well, keep it up. Nice going. And look for Mike's stuff both online and on the racks. IDW with Life and Times of Savior 28.
Trade paperback out in December.
Fantastic. Wonderful story. And really, and I'm going to do it again. Mark DeMattis and Mike Cavallaro, great story. We'll look for that in December. And then also Leviathan, again, published by?
Well, by nobody right now. We'll see.
Okay, man. Well, good. Well, then check out the first 30 pages online and more coming in Volume 3. Fantastic, man. Well, thanks for talking, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, very cool. I want to say it right.
Okay.
Excellent. I'm talking with Simon Fraser, who is part of Activate and has a great science fiction story that is a prologue to clearly a longer story. And I must say, in the few pages that were given in the primer, it got me very excited in terms of really following the story online. And I'm going to mess up the title because Dino gave me the book last night to do a crash reading course on everybody. So please tell me the title of the story.
Well, the story in the primer is called When Lily Met Cosmo, which is basically the sort of origin story of these two characters I have on the Activate site, which is Lily McKenzie and the Minds of Charybdis. But it's going to be part of a sort of a larger three kind of arc storyline, which is all about Lily's family. And the first, basically, I've used the primer as a seed for later on for the next story I'm going to tell. So it's basically the foundations I'm laying. I didn't want to start Lily Charybdis with an origin story, so I did it in the primer instead.
And Lily is on a space station and is new to the station and encounters a strange old man. Am I correct? This is Cosmo.
Well, the strange old man is it's important to her future. He's basically her father, but she doesn't know who he is. And he almost knows. I mean, he's gone insane, basically. And it's the story. The next story arc is basically finding out what happened to him.
I don't want to spoil that, man.
I think the inference is there. I mean, if you read the strip online and you kind of like work it out, and you can kind of contextualize it and see where it's going. But it's the first time when she meets Cosmo. So that's the kind of meeting of those two characters, and they become they're the core of the story. And then basically her family story is Lily McKenzie and the Charybdis story is her looking out for her brother. Who's her twin brother, who's kind of gone off the rails substantially. And the next arc is all about what happened to her father, what happened, what went wrong, and what was the story of her parents.
Very cool, man. And it really played like a Lost teaser. It reminded me very much like Lost in terms of there's definitely a mystery here between these characters. And when I got to the end of what is in the primer, I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to have to go online and read more of this. It was really great. I mean, really, in very few pages, and I was just speaking with Mike Cavallaro a couple seconds ago, I think you guys achieve a lot of character in very few pages, and that's really tough to do.
I mean, I think for my sake, because I grew up on 2008, I've been working for 2008 for 15 years, and, you know, they do six-page chunks of story, and you have a complete arc, you have character development, you have plot movement, and then you end on a cliffhanger. That's very much the old serial format. I mean, that's the Flash Gordon's, this thing, and I think, which is very, used to be very important to comics, which were the smaller chunks. Lost has almost reintroduced that back into comics again, because we're all looking at Lost going, that's how you tell a story.
You guys have been, as you say, at 2018, you guys have been hip to that all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's only so much space to do it, and you really got to concentrate it.
Simon, what are the features of 2018 that you've worked on?
I mean, I've worked on Just Dread, everyone does, but I'm the co-creator of The Adventures of Nicolai Dante.
Absolutely, yes.
Which is done pretty well.
So I've read the humanoid strand of that. Fantastic, man. Absolutely. That's great.
So there's now, I think, 9 volumes of that out now. It's insane. And we're now kind of in the stages of wrapping it up. We said it was going to be a 5-year story, and we're now in the 13th, 14th year. So it's gone rather well. I mean, it's gone better than we expected, but we've promised that we would end it. And we're now kind of approaching the end, drawing basically the apocalypse of Dante's world. And that's going to be happening the next sort of year or so as we kind of like slowly get to the conclusion.
Very cool. You know, and it's funny, and forgive me because it is, I do read, I try to read 2080 when I can, and again, Humanoids has been a wonderful primer for me to become introduced to a lot of these features.
Yeah.
And as you say as well, you guys really are trained for short form in a way that I think a lot of American creators do kind of struggle with it because they're just not used to writing in that kind of format.
I mean, I think in the 80s, the British invasion of the 80s, when like Alan Moore and all these writers were coming in, I mean, you read their comics and it's like, wow, it's like crack. it moves so fast. And it, like, you know, Alan Moore's got his contention of the pages stanza idea, whereby each page is a sort of self-contained thing in itself, and it ends on a cliffhanger. So these things, you're turning those pages like crazy because you want to know what's going on next. There's a lot going on in the Swamp Things, because these guys were all trained on that format, and it teaches you to be sort of very unindulgent. You really pare it down. I mean, as Andy Diggle used to say, it's a shot glass full of rocket fuel. You really have to get going because you don't have any space to waste. I think that's kind of flipped over now. We've kind of, I mean, Warren Ellis's long, long, long cinematic epics of nothing very much happening, but beautifully drawn, is kind of the antithesis of that. But, you know, it's nice to have both things. I mean, like, the nice thing about doing Lilia is that I could stretch it and I can also contract it, and I know how to do both of those things if I have to do it. It's nice to have both the timing freedom.
I must admit, I am slightly embarrassed because I'm sure that I've read a lot more of your stuff that I am aware of without seeing your name. So, I appreciate that.
I don't necessarily want to be famous. I want to have good stories that people remember the stories. I don't necessarily want to be the guy, oh, you did that and that. No, I just, that story. Do you remember that story? Oh, yeah, I really like that. That's fine.
That's cool. Well, and again, you certainly made an immediate impression on me in the Activate Primer. How did you hook up with these guys?
When I moved to Brooklyn about 3 years ago, I got a couple of contacts from people who knew people, and one of my best friends said, you got to meet Dean Haspel. He's like, it's like the Rat Pack of comics in Brooklyn.
It's
the Godfather. And you meet Dean, and you meet everybody. And it's like, so within about a few weeks of that, I kind of like, I was hanging out with Mike Fife, Cavallaro came along, Tim Hamilton, Leland Purvis, and we all now share a studio. We all basically see each other every single day, which is great because these are the people I would hang out if given a choice. I would hang out with anyway. So my social life and my business life are taken care of in one tight package. So hanging out with them, and they're doing their Activate strips, and they're basically, that became what I was reading every week. And it's like, this is really exciting, and I can't not be part of this. Even if I could, even if Dean would let me choose, I mean, he more or less coerced me into doing it, and I'm so glad he did.
Are there any different thoughts that you do from a storytelling process, thinking in terms of digital comics versus paper?
There's a number of differences in the way the format works, because it's you're working in a very long time scale. I mean, Lily McKenzie in The Minds of Charybdis took me 2 years to do. So you have a lot of time to think in between pages. So the story kind of, I mean, I keep using this analogy to jazz, whereby the musicians kind of riff off the audience a bit, and you can feel them developing ideas on the fly, which is exciting. It's exciting to hear that in music, and it's exciting to draw to a live audience, as it were. So I think the story is much stronger. The characters are much stronger than it would have been otherwise, because I really felt the audience reaction to things, and I could pull away from certain things I think they were expecting, and then push towards things I think were working. I could kind of surf the dynamic of the room, as it were, and I really enjoyed that. And I've never had that experience before. It doesn't happen in comics. You don't draw comics to a live audience. It never happens. So web comics allow you to do that, and I think it changed much for the better the quality of the story.
Very cool. You know, I can't deny that I got through comics in the mainstream, and I think yours and Mike's stories in particular, I think, are very good introductions for Activate, for mainstream fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you say, too, and coming from 2000 AD, I think it's a style that DC and Marvel people, I think, I would pick up on very quickly and, you know, again, appreciate and want to seek out more stuff. So I think that's great, man.
I hope so. I mean, I'm very much in my comfort zone, because science fiction and adventure, I mean, that's what I grew up doing. It's like, I'm a new writer. I had never really written very much before. I was going to stick to something I knew. And I think I could do well. So that's why Lily is the way it is. I think, hopefully, I've now committed to doing this huge amount of Lily, because people want to see more of it, and that's fine. But I have all these other things I wanted to do, which I'm not quite brave enough to tackle yet, which aren't science fiction, which don't have any easy hooks, don't have, like, cute space babes in space, and I'm going to try and do that on Activate, because it's this experimental platform as well. So it's now become very part of my future in a fundamental way. Activate is where I will push things out, which I could try things, which is exciting.
Very cool, man. We'll be part of the experiment and follow the adventure at Activate. And again, and forgive me, the long title again is
Lily McKenzie and the Minds of Charybdis.
There you go, from Simon Fraser. And it's a pleasure meeting you, Simon, face to face. I have a feeling that I might have even commented on some of your art on MySpace or something like that back in the past. So, but I've enjoyed what I've seen, and I look forward to seeing more. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, John. Appreciate it.
Well, I'll say Michel Fife. I'm talking to Michel Fife, but we're going to call him Mike for the purposes of the interview. And Mike, tell me about your feature in the primer.
My feature is Zagus. That's my new comic.
And it's, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, it's kind of like a, I've said before, it's like a love letter to Cliff Sarrett's Polly and Her Pals.
Okay.
And Tank Girl, Jamie Hewlett's Tank Girl. Okay. And everything in between, because, you know, there's so many things that I want to put in this comic, you know, to make it seem fun, kind of bizarre, kind of have a dreamlike quality, but still, I want it to be grounded in some sort of reality, you know? Like with the stories, I want it to be very, not mundane, but more down to earth, you know, like real natural concerns, but where the art itself has like a fun quality to it, like just kind of goofy, borderline goofy, but hopefully it won't retract from the story experience, you know, from the reading experience. So that's what I want to do. That's what I want to achieve with the story. Hopefully I have, so I don't know.
No, I think you did, man. It was very funny. It was a good relationship story, but also some metaphysical things going on there as well. And it starts with a woman with cactus tines in her foot, and it develops from there.
Well, the thing is, it's a brother and a sister stuck in the middle of nowhere. They live, it's, you know, it's their own world, you know, and it's that dynamic that I'm interested in, as opposed to like a relationship or just friends. You know, they're kind of bound together. They have to live with each other. So it has a lot of family issues coming up in future stories. But having said that, I do want to explore all sorts of stories, any kind of story that I want. You know, if I want to do a horror story or a slice of life story, I'm gonna do that through these characters. So I don't know. I just want to have fun with these comics. So
obviously, I'm assuming you have a sister, and this is coming from some possible sibling relationship.
That was inspired. I was raised an only child, and I do have a little sister.
Okay.
But, you know, I wasn't raised with her, so I'm not familiar with that sort of household chemistry, right? So, but I am inspired by that, like, you know, in talking to her, watching her grow up. So a little bit's going into that, you know. But they're mostly friends above and beyond all, you know. They get along, so I don't know. It's pretty interesting.
That's cool. Well, yeah, I mean, no,
hopefully
I mean,
hopefully that'll come through in the comic.
I think the
sense of fun, at least. I don't know.
No, I think it did. And also, I mean, as someone who has a sister and stuff, no, I felt the brother-sister vibe, definitely. And it was very funny to read that. How did you hook up with the Activate guys?
Well, I used to assist Dean on a bunch of his comics, and then I started doing my own comics. I had been doing my comics, but no long-running story or anything like that, you know. So when he started Activate, I was just there in the studio with him all the time, and he's like, you should do a story. And I was actually reluctant at first. I just didn't really trust or like web comics or that whole forum. I was just so, not against it, but I just didn't want to be a part of it just yet. And he's just like, just do it. Just put it up there and see what happens. You know, as a result, you know, I have a story out of it. Panorama, that was my first Activate story.
Okay. What's Panorama about?
Panorama was about a runaway kid who has kind of like a flesh warping anxiety experience. He goes through that. It's, I don't know, hijinks ensue once he gets to the city. I mean, that's like the... I haven't thought about Panorama in like a year or so. So it's a love story. It's like a horror romance. Black and white, you know, kind of noirish, kind of manga influence. But when I say manga, I don't mean, you know, the typical tropes that you think about when you think about, like, anime. I'm mostly inspired by Suihiro Maruo, which is, like, you know, more like erotic, grotesque type stuff, you know. And when I say erotic, I don't mean, like, porn. Although there are raw scenes in the book, you know, I'm just inspired by that kind of stuff. Chester Brown's Yummy Fur, you know, that kind of aesthetic I really love. So I wanted to kind of put that out there. Also inspired by Steve Ditko's Shay the Changing Man. It's just a bunch of stuff that I love. Put that together. It was my first comic. I improvised half of it, and I put it up on Activate. And people responded well to it, you know, to my surprise. So now this is a totally different mood. You know, Zagus is a totally different monster from this. And the funny thing about Zagus is that, it, to me, it looks so beta compared to all the other stories. You know, it's so like...
The next phase.
My story, when I say beta, I just mean, like, it looks like a rough... It's almost like a prototype of a story. Like, everything's so slick and, you know, so clean and together, which I love, and they're great. But I think I'm playing to my strengths here, you know, which is all, like, hand-drawn stuff. I respond to that more as an artist, as a reader, actually. So it's just funny how that's, like, the opening sequence, and that's kind of my story oh, that's my identity in this thing called Activate. So I thought that was interesting.
Your identity in terms of yourself as an artist, or the stories, this
both as an artist, as a member of this group. By beta, I meant like it looks kind of rough and raw and just kind of clunky at times, but that's on purpose. You know, I just kind of like that look, that style, that feel, you know. So I just think it's funny that it's that's a look that's in a web comics print or what have you, you know, whether it be online or in the book. I just, you know, I'm comfortable in that little pocket of style, I guess. I don't know how else to say it.
What's it like dealing with the digital community? That's something I haven't asked the other guys yet.
Digital community. It's been good. It's been good. Yeah. Like, the commenters are nice. You know, they're all very, very supportive. You know, get some constructive criticism here and there, but they're mostly very supportive. And it's all the other fellow cartoonists as well, so they kind of understand the language and stuff. And we're trying to branch out and kind of get other readers. You know, and they seem to respond well too. You know, it's still a very new thing. I mean, as you know, web comics, it's like, oh, let's just hold on to print, and it's like that. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. Who knows?
Exactly.
So it's exciting in that way, and I'm not really worried about the future. I just want to put up my comic, see if people like it, and if they do, then maybe they'll buy the book or keep reading it online. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
That's cool, man. Well, it was a pleasure talking to you, and continued success. And I know you're with a good group of guys and a great community with Activate, so we'll look for more Zegas, and we thank you for talking with us, Michel Fife.
Yeah, thank you so much. Take care.
Talking more with the Activate creators, and I have a moment now to speak with Tim Hamilton, who is writing the adventure and drawing The Adventures of the Floating Elephant, and specifically in the Activate Primer, the story is the tales of the elephant cowboy, and that's a very interesting kind of Western and kind of almost circus-like amalgam. I mean, you can't help but think of circus with an elephant, but you tell me what we can expect from these tales of the elephant.
Yeah, the Primer was for people who don't know, the Primer is made up of short stories that relate to our webcomics, but they're meant to be self-contained, so you can read the Primer and you don't have to go to the website to see what happened next. Excuse me. Oh, yes. My story, Adventures of the Floating Elephant, is rather self-contained on the web. So what I did with the Primer story is I went back. I love history. It takes place in the 1929 or 26. I forget. I know the time period because of the characters who are in the story. There's one historical character. So it takes place outside of the Floating Elephant story online, but if you read them together, you'll just get more of a richer picture of the characters. I guess that's the best way to explain it, because Adventures of the Floating Elephant is more of a novel. And in fact, I've worked, for those who don't know me, I worked with Gerard Jones on The Trouble with Girls back in the early 90s, late 80s.
And I'm a big fan of that series. Very well.
The black and white explosion, as it was called. And
good stuff, very funny, great parodies.
Well, thank you.
Good humor and good action in that fine series.
And after that, with Jerry, I did some Green Lantern, and I did some work at Dark Horse Aliens, and I've done humorous work for Nickelodeon, who's unfortunate. Nickelodeon Magazine. I wrote and drew some stories in there. And I guess Floating Elephant is something I never really did, even though I grew up reading Spider-Man like anybody else. I was in a small town. I couldn't get things I saw. I saw things like Cerebus advertised here and there, and I knew they existed. And I always wanted to see those, but it wasn't until I was older and got to other cities and found these things. And I always had an urge to read other things beyond superheroes, because nothing against them. You can read them for a certain time, I think. You know, and I had my time, like, reading Spider-Man. And obviously, Spider-Man's still around, and I can't read it now because I read my time period. And
okay.
I know the character's not going to die.
No, I can appreciate it.
So that's a hard problem to get around for the publisher. So at any rate, I don't know where I was going with this. I was going to say, I never really, I think deep down, wanted to do a superhero adventure. Somewhat I did, because I grew up reading it. And Floating Elephant is kind of my young adult story, adventure story. And I'm just seeing if I could do that. And it has a finite story that will have beginning and end. You know, it's not... Well, who knows if it'll be around 20 years from now, but...
Very cool. Well, how did you hook up with Activate?
I live in Brooklyn. I had met Dean and Fifei, and basically he just emailed me and asked me if I wanted to join this new webcomic collective back, when was it? Is it 2005 now? Or 6 that he started it? And oddly enough, I was working on a little comic that I was wondering maybe I'll do this online called Pet Sitter, which is also on the site. It's archived because that one is complete 71-page graphic novel. It's very humorous experiment I did, which I know some people hate that term, but it was somewhat, I knew where the story was going, but each week I kind of would draw and write, or I'd write ahead, and I wasn't quite sure where the story was going to go, and I let the characters kind of drive it, which can be a mistake or can work out. I mean, you can read that comic for yourself and decide whether it worked or not.
For the where digital comics are going, and I've asked this of both Simon and also Mike before. Are you conscious of the panel size, and are you concerned in terms of the way it looks on a portable device as much as a computer as opposed to paper?
I am concerned in.
Do you design with that in mind?
Oh, well, on the Activate website, I draw it hoping one day it will be published. So for that script, I think there's room in the future for both, because I was just talking to Simon about this. I assume that in the future, the comic strips that used to be in the daily newspaper will be on your iPhone Touch, because they fit great in that. And I'm surprised I haven't seen more talk of that or any... maybe there is, but I just haven't seen it. I've seen lots of, Tom Grobo, this type of comics up showing up, and the application, which allows you to zoom in on the panels. So, I mean, that's fine with me. As an artist, I love art, so, you know, I love to buy a big book with Prince Valiant.
Absolutely.
And Prince Valiant would...
Yeah. Prince Valiant, yeah, get the car door size.
Yes, that. Yes. And, you know, those aren't going to look great on the iPhone, I don't think. So there's room for both. And if I were going to do a comic for the iPhone, there's so many now, I would illustrate it with that in mind. Because I would love to do humorous comics maybe that appear every day in that format. That's another, you know, I have two things I do with the humorous comics I've done for Nickelodeon Magazine and a comic like Floating Elephant where the artwork's a little more... work, labored, whatever you want to call it.
Oh no, and I love your style. I think it's gorgeous. And I'm gonna have to go back and look for your
no.
Trouble with Girls. And yeah, absolutely,
no,
man.
Trouble with Girls, no.
Oh, okay. Well, and also, yeah, I noticed you've adapted Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous. I just seeing the art and really no seeing and like what I've seen so far in Floating Elephant. I mean.
I work differently on any given project. I did the art and the colors on Fahrenheit.
That's awesome.
Which was great. I showed the publisher what I was going to do, and you know, he said, okay, go ahead and do it. Because it's very satisfying to have control over the whole project, as artists love to do. I'm sure you've talked to many artists, and we're all very narcissistic.
Who published this?
Hill and Wang.
Okay. Wow,
like
you know...
A book publisher that is getting... You know, book publishers are getting into...
Isn't that interesting that they are getting into comics? Yeah.
And they're going to do Something Wicked This Way Comes and The Martian Chronicles, which are being worked on right now. So I was lucky enough to be, like, first one out and lucky enough to do this book, which is a very famous book. And I
absolutely. I want to... And forgive me by mentioning other artists and comparing what I'm seeing in Fahrenheit 451, but it reminds me a lot of Sean Phillips and Val Staples' work on Criminal from a coloring and an art standpoint.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I try not to. I love comics, but I try not to look at them too much because I'm a sponge for artwork. And when working on that, I looked at I have an art history library at home. I looked at a lot of Art Deco. I looked at a lot of advertising art from the 50s.
Okay.
To get a look and a feel I wanted, I kind of wanted the Art Deco look, a very graphic look for this book. So I've heard different people say this looks like this and that, and it's interesting all the different comparisons are made. Some people think it looks very classic, like classic illustration.
Yeah.
I mean, comic illustration. And I didn't even look at comics. Like I said, I was looking at graphic design and old illustration, and I'm surprised at the reaction that people have had.
Yeah, and I would put Michael Lark in there as well. And again, I'm using a couple of mainstream names that some of my listeners might, you know, kind of say, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. And again, I think they go to the same classic influences as well as Art Deco. And yeah,
because I did Treasure Island. I adapted that, and that's kind of a obviously didn't get the press and the push. The guy was a small, like I would say, manga size, black and white. And I looked at a lot. Egon Schiele, you know who I'm talking about? You can look him up. I looked at a lot of his artwork, and Kathy Kalowitz, you know who that is?
No,
so that's fine, but I mean, that's a nice costume.
Hot girl just walked by.
But, so that's what I do, and if you look up Treasure Island, we see some samples on my website. You'll see it's very different from this because it's a whole different feel, different time period.
Do you have, in addition to your, you know, place on Activate, do you have your own individual site as well?
Oh, yes, so.
Okay, so timhamilton.com, or?
You know, I don't go there much.
There you go.
My website is hamilton-tim.pair.com, unfortunately.
There you go.
Very Ditko-esque business card that he's just handed me. I like that. I like that.
Yeah, Fife and I are both Ditko fans, but again, I try not to look at it and let it influence me. Although I love his work, it's a.
You want to learn it, throw it away, and then obviously you like kind of create yourself. I can appreciate that. Wow, that's
Treasure Island art is over here, so it's somewhat.
Absolutely, a little Brian Boland-esque, I would say. Looking at your Treasure Island stuff, that's great, man. Wow. Well, Fahrenheit 451 is already out, and I'm sorry again. The publisher is
Hill and Wing.
Hill and Wing, and Treasure Island is through.
Oh, that was through Puffin Graphics in 2005. I think that came out. So.
Oh, maybe. I was going to say, maybe Amazon or eBay would have it. Regardless, check out, really, and if you look at Floating Elephant on Activate, I think you'll find, a very interesting style that I think would appeal to a mainstream fan. And never to dismiss what FIFA and some of the other guys are doing, but I'll admit, you know, usually I talk to a lot of mainstream people, and I want people to come to Activate and really check out some of all the varied styles. And if they want to see and are looking for kind of familiar territory, I would say, you know, start with Tim's work and guys like Mike as well and Simon. And I think they'll be pleased and find, you know, individual stories, individual styles, but something that's, you know, comfortable.
There's a lot of variety there. So, I mean, because I love Fife's work. And once I'm done with that, I'd like to do something more experimental like he's doing. And working on Activate, we're all kind of competing too, you know, because if someone does a fantastic job, you don't want to be you don't want to be the person who's not pulling their weight, you know. So that's how artists are.
I understand. Well, good luck with
friendly competition.
Very cool, man. Good luck with Floating Elephant, and check it out either in the primer or online at Activate.
Online free.
And absolutely, and I that's the key with really this entire program. Make sure you go to Activate and check out some of the fine work of guys like Tim Hamilton. So thank you for your time.
Well, thank you.
I am here with the filmmakers of the Activate Experience, a great 30-minute documentary, and it is Seth Kushner and Carlos Molina, and it's a pleasure to see you guys, and I've just seen the video here at the Activate panel, and I'm really glad, as I was just telling Seth, that Dean Haspiel like said, oh, dude, you got to see this. I'm serious. It's really good, and I'm really glad because not only does it highlight all the creators, but it also talks about the new Activate primer that's coming out this Wednesday, and much like Activate as well, it sounds like after it appears at a few conventions, the documentary will be available online as well. Will it be for sale? Will it be for free? What? Tell me about the...
Much like Activate, it'll be for free. Then we'll have it on Graphic NYC, which is the site that I do with Christopher Irving, which is comic creator profiles, one a week. And that'll be up there by Thanksgiving, approximately.
Excellent. And I know in the setup, guys, you mentioned that you guys are working on another project as well. And are you doing other documentaries about comic creators?
We did a short, Carlos and I actually did a short film on Paul Pope earlier this year, cool. which is online. And I guess
Culture Pop Productions.
CulturePopProductions.com.
That's where most of our productions are. So.
Right. And I think we
step in, Carlos, because my mic's not that good.
Sorry.
You're a soft-spoken man.
Yes, I am.
And there's a few others I think we're considering. It's hard to, wait to say, I guess.
Do you want to talk about the next project, or is that like a secret?
For a film?
Yes. The puppets.
What is it? Oh, well, actually, we're going to be doing a music video for Kevin Colden of Fishtown fame. He's in a band.
Very cool.
And they had a great idea. They actually built puppets, like Muppet-type puppets that'll represent each guy in the band. And because Kevin's an amazing comic artist, he has the whole thing storyboarded out. And so we're going to shoot that sometime in the next month, I guess.
Outstanding. So, and maybe I got confused, too, because I guess you're working on a book as well about comic creators?
Right. Myself and Christopher Irving, who just walked out, we're doing a project called Graphic NYC. It's a website, New York City GraphicNovelist.com. Once a week, we do a profile on a different iconic comic creator. We've done about 50 so far.
Awesome.
I met Dean and these guys from that, actually, doing it for about a year and a half. Everyone from a lot of these guys on the stage just now to legends like Joe Simon and Neil Adams and Joe Quesada we did last week. So
sounds like
really
some familiar Word Balloon guests, but actually I think you're doing
absolutely.
Good because you got Joe Simon. That's fantastic.
That's true. Yeah, he's hard to get. So that's kind of running concurrently, and
Wonderful. It's
just one of the multiple kind of comic projects that I've been doing and Carlos and I doing the videos together. So. Yeah.
That's excellent, man. And that really, it's great. And the documentary that I just saw was really fun. Obviously, wonderful visual. And it is always one of, on the one hand, I always enjoy doing audio because it's quick and I can get it done and get it out there and everything. But comics being the visual medium that it is, obviously, you know, how long did it take you guys to put this together?
A very long time. we spend a lot of hours working on filming, editing, a lot more time editing because it's really hard to condense all that stuff into 32 minutes.
We probably had maybe 20 hours of footage, I guess, this interview type stuff,
right.
And then just picking what's important and mixing it up.
And to distill that into a half hour, you know. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I loved the effect you guys had, too, which obviously was a film effect of getting the comic strips to pass over someone's face as they were looking at a laptop.
The Activate experience, pretty much, because obviously the website and the works were projected onto the model's face, so that's the intention. There.
It looks great, and it's going to look great when you see it online as well. And I'm sorry, did you say ballpark when you think it will be online?
I think Newsarama is doing it. Well, I think Dean is bringing it. Well, okay, we're going to actually play it live at the King Con in Brooklyn on November 6th. It's a Friday night. And then it's also going to play at the Quimby Con in Chicago, and then
Hey, I'm going to have to go to that.
Okay. Chicago. Hopefully, the sound is better. I'll be able to get a better.
Is that also going to be in November? When is that?
Yes, I'm not sure the date of that. And then also. Actually, we're not going, but Dean's bringing it, unfortunately, but absolutely. And then Ape in San Francisco next week, they're going to play it there as well. And then I think right after QuimbyCon, Newsarama is going to do the week-long exclusive on that. Then we'll put it everywhere else. So
very cool, man. Well, you know, and Word Balloon's at Newsarama, so certainly we look forward to seeing it there and then going out to the other sites as well. And, you know, I'm obviously you guys are excited about webcomics in the same way that I am, and it is the variety that I think makes it, you know, so interesting. And the different styles of all the artists and writers and everything, and the different things you get, much like walking into a comic store. And the great thing is, it's free.
Exactly.
True. And actually, different than walking to comics. When you walk into a comic store, quite frankly, you know, you're kind of bombarded by superheroes. You have to kind of look a little further to see everything else. Activate, what's amazing, I think, is when you go on, it's like every kind of possible style is right in front of you. And I think that kind of variety doesn't really exist anywhere else in the real world, in a sense. So, and it's so palatable, and it's so easy just to get on and just start reading. And, you know, my first time, I was just so impressed and, you know, what they were doing on there. The level of, you know, just talent and variety.
Well, I think the excitement you guys, have just expressed, again, comes through in the movie. And that's great. So people can look forward to seeing it then at the various cons, and then it'll be at other places as well. The Activate experience, and Seth and Carlos are the creators. Am I saying Seth? Is it Seth?
Seth.
Okay, good, because it is. It's, you know, it's Sunday at a con. I'm like a little punchy and everything, so I apologize. But really, Seth, Carlos, thanks a lot, guys. It's a pleasure meeting you, and nice going on the movie, and we look forward to seeing it online.
Thank you, John. Pleasure being on. I'm a huge fan of your podcast, so thank you.
Well, now it's a mutual fandom, so that's cool.
Excellent.
Very happy to be talking with the godfather of Activate. It's Dean Haspiel. And it's funny because I was asking all the guys how they got, you know, into Activate and stuff. And it seems like, you know, through contact with you, and you're the guy that pulled everybody in.
Yeah, I think you're going to get sick of my name associated to Activate after a while. But, yeah, I basically have corralled some of the greatest cartoonists in comics and convinced them that the web is the future only because it is, you know. So as proven by the fact that now even Marvel and DC are, you know, creating initiatives or using other platforms to, you know, put their comics out there in these other formats, because that is the future, whether we like it or not, us lovers of print.
Well, and it was cool because, as I understand it, Activate kind of evolved from LiveJournal. And, you know, that's the thing. A few years ago, you guys were putting that stuff out there and, you know, were really one of the early destinations for web comics.
Yeah, I mean, basically that started because while working on our print projects for a year when nobody sees this stuff, and then, you know, once in a while when some of my other like-minded cartoonists were teasing their stuff online just to each other, like showing your peers, your virtual office mates, your works, what I decided was, wait a second, why don't we also start to do some of our own comics, sans editorial, you know, permission and pressure, and create our signature works online on a regular basis, i.e. weekly, because, you know, it was kind of infectious to get, like, a response. There's a currency to that that you can't put a price on, which is feedback, which is to even criticism, you know? I mean, it's not always, like, you know, being lauded. Sometimes people point stuff out to you, especially when you're doing when you're doing a comic in experimental nature of not necessarily knowing where it's going to go next. What I discovered doing Billy Dogma online was the art of the cliffhanger. I was kind of creating cliffhangers for myself because I didn't know what was going to happen next week. And if I didn't know, hopefully, you know, that would also keep not only me interested, but the readers. So that's where it started, LiveJournal. And then eventually someone said, you know what, we got to actually have a website here. So that's when we invested in creating an actual website for Activate.
Very cool, man. And, you know, believe me, as a fan of Billy Dogma, you had me going. And it was great. And also, as someone who comes from radio, podcasting kind of scratches that same itch and everything.
Yes.
No editors, no filters or anything. Really able to do something creative. So
right.
I feel a kinship with the web comics and stuff.
Yes,
absolutely,
agreed.
Man. And the Activate Primer is great. It's 16 stories. And 16
original stories that are only going to be in print. What I thought about was this kind of boomerang effect, which is, okay, I'm 42 years old. I'm always going to love print. Not everything necessarily belongs in print. I do believe that maybe your serialized comic should be digitized first, and then if it's a good enough story, it can graduate to print, or if it's popular enough, it can graduate to print in a print package, like a, you know, a collection or a graphic novel, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, the primer, the idea behind that was, okay, so there's a lot of people not necessarily reading webcomics, okay? But they go to their you know, get their weekly comics on a Wednesday at the comic shop, and they read their print comics. Well, why not kind of advertise or give an entree to those, an entry fee, as it were, to Activate by, you know, putting together 16 original stories of characters that, if you dig these stories in this primer and you like these characters, or even if you like five of them, whatever, you can then go online and read thousands of pages of these characters for free. And the boomerang effect happens again, because really what happens is that if you like those stories and they become popular online, the free ones, we'll probably repackage them in print so that they become available for people who enjoy the print version as well, you know? And it also makes a great gift. I mean, not for nothing, but in our economic times, you know, I like to think that if you can't buy a car or an acre of land, or, you know, you're having troubles with, you know, kinds of home and, you know, community type stuff, maybe it's cool to buy a comic book or a graphic novel and give it as a gift, especially because of the very fact that comics provide escapism from reality. Even though it's commenting on reality, you know, there's a certain sense of fantasy and passion that's imparted in this art form, which is why I gravitate toward it and tell the stories that I tell. So,
well, I think it's a great idea not only to have the book, but also you told me to come to the panel, and I'm really glad I did because I got to see the my pleasure, honestly. And it, you know, and that's the thing, because a lot of times it's as a guy who grew up with mainstream stuff and kind of came to alt comics late and everything. It you know, sometimes it's kind of tough getting over the hump or whatever. But I've always enjoyed your work, and it was and that's why I was able to gravitate to Billy Dogman. Was fantastic. Your work with Jonathan on The Alcoholic, Jonathan Ames, very great story. And that's why it's like, and it was you who said, hey, man, check out the panel. And I did.
Right.
Checked out the primer. The primer is great. All the different styles that are in there. And also styles, as I've told a lot of the creators that I've been talking to, styles that mainstream guys can gravitate to and not, feel like, I'm not really into the art comic scene or whatever. And it's like, well, there's more than just the art comic scene in here. And I think all different styles are represented in this primer and at Activate in general.
And honestly, you can also pat Marvel and DC on the back because they have not ignored the art indie scene either. They've started to adopt some of these styles. I mean, sure, there are some like incredible Hollywood productions happening in like Captain America and some of the more mainstream or more popular superhero books. But honestly, you have your Strange Tales, but then you have Jeff Parker writing, and he comes from the indie scene. I mean, actually, Ed Brubaker comes from indie, Bendis,
Yes.
So, and for me, there's nothing better than Scalped by Jason Aaron, the best comic being written today. So, yes, I do still buy my weekly Marvel and DC comics that I love, but they are also recognizing the indie art form. And, it's just spreading out. There's more wealth in that and styles. And then there's IDW, Dark Horse, there's Image Comics. I mean, it doesn't stop. There's a lot of great comics. It just isn't the big two anymore, and that's fair.
Well, and I know IDW is publishing the Indie Primer, or the Activate Primer, so that's cool. The Activate Experience, a nice 30-minute documentary that you showed at the panel, and I've talked to the filmmakers. They're going to hear the interview on this Word Balloon episode, and it's nice to hear that also, much like Activate, free comics and stuff, this documentary is also going to be free.
Yes.
And tell me about the distribution of this.
Okay. So the Activate Experience, as I think I said at the panel, one of the reasons why I wanted to do this was, first of all, working with Seth Kushner is amazing, and Carlos Molina, the filmmakers. I've worked with them on other projects, and they've started to dabble more in the video. And I said, well, let's. And they were doing like 5-minute things, I think shorts, and I was like, you know what? Let's do something more expansive, and let's do something with Activate. And what I, from all the interviews I've done, like with you or in print or in the internet, I haven't really been able to capture the community flavor, I think, and the personalities that we talk about here. So as much as I can talk about like the origins and what we're intending to do with Activate, and then of course as evidenced by the comics we do, I don't think I ever captured the feeling of what it's like to be around these people. And I think what this documentary does is captures a moment of these personalities, these people who it's hard that's a challenge in print to try to impart that. And this shows that because it's moving pictures, it's sound, for all intents and purposes, it's a puff piece for Activate, but it's warranted, I think. And basically what we're going to do is we debuted it here at Baltimore. Next weekend I'll be at APE Alternative Press Expo, and we're going to be showing it at my spotlight panel there. And then come November 7th and 8th, will be King Con, which is the first Brooklyn Comics Con happening.
Very cool.
At the Brooklyn Lyceum. We're going to be showing it there that weekend. And then I think the weekend after that, November 14th, I'm trying to set up something now in Chicago, possibly with Quimby's and a couple other comic shops, to show the movie there. And then I think Newsarama, I'm talking to some folks at Newsarama about showing it exclusively for a week at Newsarama, and then it will land and stay at Graphic New York Blog, which is Seth Kushner and Chris Irving's blog. That's where they've been doing portraits on many different cartoonists. One other thing we're going to be doing in Brooklyn is we're going to be doing the Activate Salon, which will be a signing and a reading of the Activate Primer on October 29th. And we're going to be doing a slideshow where we'll feature like 4 or 5 different stories and be read out loud, which isn't necessarily the best way to enjoy your comics, but we're going to try something new there. So,
wow. Yeah, that's like, wow, Billy Dogman. I don't know if, on the big screen, that's going to be.
I actually had a great experience with Rob Sikoriak, who does a carousel in New York, where I actually had to read Billy Dogman out loud. And it really was an amazing experience because I I didn't think you should be able to say these words out loud, some of the things he says. And it was kind of... It was a tongue twister, I got to admit.
Oh, okay.
And you know what I did? I experimented with something. It worked really well, and I'd like to try to do this in the future. I added a heartbeat, a perpetual sound of a heartbeat, a low heartbeat.
Interesting.
Playing...
Interesting.
Heidi liked it. Heidi McDonald just said how much she liked it. That's cool.
I played it behind the entire experience of the story as I read it out loud. And I actually had my studio mate and fellow cartoonist Joan Riley play Jane Legit. So we got to have a good female voice
very
as well.
Cool.
But it actually kind of worked, I think.
That's
so
awesome. Man.
Yeah.
Man, you guys got a very hip scene of comics in Brooklyn and stuff. You know, Bergen Street, I've heard other podcasts interview
Street.
the guys over there. I saw the footage, obviously, in the documentary as well. It looks like a great place. Looks like a great store.
I mean, we're working with many folks because it's kind of like a mini little cause, you know? I mean, but ultimately, it's about good storytelling.
Absolutely.
And telling really good comics, and it's comics first. Even though we're playing with movies and, you know, doing other kinds of salon-type things, I think ultimately the success of Activate is that when you actually indulge these stories, they look cool, they read cool, and they mean something.
Well, and also I think, too, much like the digital motion comics and stuff, I think web comics have a chance to pull in other readers that wouldn't necessarily go into stores. And,
right.
You know, it would never occur to them to walk into the direct market and check out a store
right.
and pick up stuff. They might see it online.
Right.
And that's why I appreciate, too, that you're getting the word out in these different media venues as well.
You have to. I mean, between print and working with retailers, which have been very kind and supportive to the Activate cause, and the primer right now, to also be able to have it available in these other formats. You know, I can't be a dinosaur. You know, I may feel like one sometimes, but I have enough people kicking me in the leg and me kicking them in the leg. And, you know, the group collective actually works for each other in that way. So, yes, no, you can't just stay behind, you know.
Very cool, man. And I got to ask you for a second about Bored to Death, because first of all, it was great. You know, Alex Segura at the New York Con told me, he's like, listen, I know you don't know who Jonathan Ames is, but you really should do a video interview with him, which I did.
Right.
And it was great. And it was real. And I said, well, I don't know much about it. And he go, well, you know, Dean's doing this book with him, The Alcoholic. I'm like, oh, well, I talked to him about Dean. That's cool. And, you know, it was great. And he talked about your friendship and everything. And then now to see the show,
yeah.
It just makes me laugh even more.
Yeah.
And it didn't even occur to me. I understand you also do the illustration.
Yes.
At the beginning
yes.
of, you know, and the title sequence
right.
and everything.
This is the thing. Jonathan Ames and I have been friends for many years now, and he's been gracious enough to collaborate with me. Now we're like multimedia collaborators. It's pretty bizarre because at best I was going to maybe do a one-pager with him for High Times, and it kind of got rejected by then-editor Ann Nesenti, of all people, at High Times.
I heard she's editing
yeah,
over there. That's awesome.
There.
The old Daredevil writer,
so,
folks.
Exactly. So, and what was her book? The Lucky... I forget right now. Anyway, so... but, you know, so Jonathan and I were able to do this graphic novel together. I've also done illustrations for his latest essay collection called The Double Life is Twice as Good,
oh, cool.
which just came out recently. It's
awesome.
A great book. And then he was able to pitch and sell Bored to Death, which was based on a short story he wrote, originally appeared in McSweeney's and now is in the latest collection that I just mentioned. Turned that into a TV show, and they shot the pilot. He loosely based...
he always stresses loosely based.
He stresses it because I stressed it.
Yeah, I
so
that.
We
I
all stress it. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Loosely based version of me in the show played by Zach Galifianakis. And he is a cartoonist. And that's about... And some of the plot lines that happened to him kind of happened to me. Again,
okay.
I can elaborate that in the future date once all the stories come out.
Fair enough.
But I am no sad sack. And
no,
I, you know,
not.
I mean... But that's
cool.
Zach playing along with the, you know, making up, you know, he's creating the character too, with Jonathan and everybody else.
No, I understand. And they are kind of their own animals,
these
characters. And it reminds me of when, like, they make an X-Men movie, and while there are shades of the comic in
right.
there, it is its own animal.
Right.
So
it becomes, because the minute you add a human being to an idea, this is going to change everything,
sure.
you know? But
I like how Jason, though, you know, like Jonathan gets, you know, Jason is a decent looking guy to play
right.
him.
Right.
And you're a good looking guy,
yeah.
man. And I'm like, it didn't even occur to me that Zach was you. And it's like,
right.
oh, you know, that's Dean. And I'm like,
right.
that's awesome. So, yeah, the first thing I said to him about Friday night, I see Dean. I'm like, I didn't know that was you. It's loosely based. I'm like, all right,
man. But, yeah, no, I'm providing all the artwork for the character that draws in the show. I did the keyframe art for the opening sequence of the show, which is animated by Curious Pictures, and they did a really experimental thing with where they had the literature in the book. It opens up on a book, a pulp novel, and the pages turn and it stops, and the lettering, the fonts turn into characters.
Yes.
And then they based a lot of the movement and the characterization from my art, and then did the whole animation thing and told this narrative story. It's really cool.
It reminds me of, and I forget the filmmaker, the animator's name, that does all those cool, really short kind of, like he did a whole thing, like 50 different ways of why to stop smoking. And I forget,
okay.
Tom, and I forget his last name.
I know what you're talking about, but yeah, so.
I know you might know, but it's cool.
I don't know.
Well,
I mean.
People watch it on the show, obviously. It looks fantastic.
It's a really cool opening. Jason Schwartzman actually sang the song and wrote the music that he co-wrote with Jonathan Ames. Jonathan Ames is all over this. And the really brilliant thing behind what he's doing here as well is a new show will appear. And then you never really hear about the creator or the writer. You know, it's basically focused on the stars and the quick one or two line about what the concept is. Jonathan Ames not only, like, named the character after himself. I mean, he's so ingrained in every aspect of this show, between producing it, writing it. I mean, I'm sure he'll probably even direct an episode in season two, you know? I mean, and as he should, because he's like a renaissance artist. He can write. He can he goes on stage and performs.
Absolutely.
And tells stories. I mean,
great,
he's most
wonderful storyteller.
Famous for that,
absolutely.
You know? And now he's doing television. And then
yes.
And movies will be next. So, and we'll probably do another comic together. We've been talking about doing a noir, crime noir together.
Oh, that's great.
So
well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
That's great, man. And, you know, no, I learning, too, that Ted Danson's character is based in, it's a cross between, and I forget the Vanity
George
Fair.
Clinton. And I think Chris Hutchins or somebody.
Okay.
Or,
and I also heard the editor of Vanity Fair, Gay.
I don't think so.
Oh, no? Okay.
I don't think so.
Right,
I don't think
you're
so.
Closer to the project,
yeah,
man.
No, his name is George Christopher.
Okay.
So George
yeah.
Plimpton and Christopher Hutchins, I think.
Hitchens, yeah, yeah.
Or
yeah.
Hitchens, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No worries. And in the Plimpton connection, there's another reason why, because I know Jonathan Boxed to write some of his stuff.
Right.
And I got to meet George a couple times when
really?
I was covering boxing. Yeah, I covered boxing for a long time. So,
wow.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
you should talk to Jonathan about boxing.
You know, we were going to try and set something up from the alcoholic, and hopefully, and I'm sure he's busy as hell with the show, but hopefully he's got some time and we'll set something up.
I'll try to hook you up, but
I
can tell you a little sneak peak.
Sure.
Episode 8, which is the first season of 8 episodes,
okay.
Does end on a boxing match.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm not going to tell you any more than that.
Oh, excellent. I look forward
really
to that.
Funny.
Well, that's why the tone of the show is that kind of like neurotic noir, and that's wonderful. So maybe that's something, a flavor of what you guys might be doing in the comic?
No, actually, the next thing we do is going to be a little dark if we do this idea that we're talking about. So we'll see what happens.
That's cool. And that's why The Alcoholic was so great, too. I mean, it's such a personal story. And that's what's incredible. And again, that's what I like about Bored to Death, too, because it's the shade of Jonathan.
Right.
But his stories and his monologues and his writings and stuff get much more intense. It's not as lighthearted as the series is.
There's a lot of deepness in what Jonathan writes. I mean, what he does is he's vulnerable, so he can make you feel like, okay, I can listen to this guy, because he's either making fun of himself or he's showing a side that we don't necessarily want to show, an embarrassing side.
Absolutely.
But then he clinches you and gets you and actually, like, then imparts some interesting wisdom. You know, I've told
yes.
in many other interviews I've done, I've said, you know, maybe in my 20s and 30s are like my punk rock years, you know, where I'm kind of screaming and kicking and talking about life when really I don't know that much about life. It isn't until about we're 50 years old that we actually have some wisdom to you know, and then we can get to disco.
So what's coming up for you, man? I know you're, and
right.
obviously you're going to be promoting all this, and as you said at
right.
the conventions, but art-wise, what's coming up
all
for
right.
you?
All right, so, I mean, we just, we're pimping the Activate Primer right now in hopes that people will learn more about Activate and pick up this book and see how cool these characters are. And then I'm also completing, I'm 24 pages away from finishing Cuba. I think it's going to be called Cuba, My Revolution, written by Inverna Lopez, who's a very important woman in my life. She's kind of like my second mother. And she'd been telling me little bits and pieces about her story, having grown up in Cuba and during Castro's revolution and joining his militia and being a surgeon and all these events that occur as the ideology behind the revolution started to diminish and turn into something else. But she was still a champion of what Castro was doing at the time, and then basically got betrayed in certain ways that the story will divulge. And ultimately what the story is about is the revolution and an emergence of an artist that needs to freely express herself, and how that was the tipping point, what made her have to finally leave Cuba and the events that, you know, occur around that. So it's a really heady, heavy book. I'm trying to find some levity in it because, you know,
sure,
it can't all be maudlin and sad, you know.
Just like your stuff with Jonathan.
Exactly. And the thing about Jonathan is, like, as much as you can laugh at the events and everything, I think you walk away from the book feeling a little sad about the guy, you know.
Yes.
So, and he knows that too, you know. So anyway, I'm working on these, like, intense memoirs, and I honestly, the next thing I want to do is I want to draw like robot alien dolphins having sex in outer space or something completely different. You know,
absolutely, and you're capable of it, man. We've seen it, so that's cool.
Well, that's the other thing. Come when I complete this Cuba graphic novel for Vertigo, come Christmas, the next thing I'm hopping out aboard to is Street Code Season 2 for Zuda.
Excellent. I was going to ask you.
Thank you.
For Zuda. Very cool.
And I've got all the stories written out. I just have to draw them.
Cool.
And I'll relaunch. The idea is to relaunch Billy Dogman at Activate, either with As Big as Earth or depending on a possible publishing deal, which I can't really talk about until it's squared.
Okay.
If it's not As Big as Earth, it'll be a different Billy Dogman story. Perhaps I might call it Peekaboo Lipstick. But we'll see. So I have plenty of ideas, and I'm also developing about two other ideas that are in development right now. So
that's great, man. And it's your diversity that I think keeps me coming back to everything that you do, and I appreciate that. It's a pleasure to read your stuff, man.
Thank you so much, John. And like I've always said, that my career is like hopscotching. You know, you can't peg me. And I hope that's a good thing.
No, I think it is, and I think it keeps you active, it keeps you versatile, and it keeps people interested to see what's coming around the corner, man. So continued success, and good luck with the Activate stuff.
Thank you so
and
much.
Hope that you do come to Chicago, because I'll definitely see you there at Quimby's. And everything looks cool, and that's the purpose of this Word Balloon, is to drive people to Activate. It's activatecomics.com, and it's A-C-T-I.
Do the
URLs for it.
It's activatecomics.com, but comics with an X.
Okay.
That'll get you there the easiest. So.
Cool. So there you go, activatecomicswithanx.com. Check out all the stuff. And really, the Activate Primer comes out from IDW on Wednesday. 16 great stories, among them another great Billy Dogma story from Dean Haspiel. So thanks, Dean.
Thank you.
The Activate Salon is coming your way at KingCon. That'll be at the Brooklyn Lyceum the weekend of November 7th and 8th. If you're in the area, you may want to check it out. Lots of great creators are showing up to KingCon in Brooklyn at the Lyceum, among them the Activate Salon, which will include a showing of the Activate experience. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you that Word Balloon is all over the internet. Of course, we're at wordballoon.com. You can find us at Newsarama. We're at iTunes. Make sure you jump on the RSS feed, subscribe to the Word Balloon feed, and don't miss an episode. If you need to contact me, feel free via email, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.